Okay, I'm going to go ahead and start recording. At least I've got the audio for now. We'll see if the screen recording works. I can't be sure. Yes? Someone has already volunteered for today. So, but for, I will post a message by tomorrow saying how to sign up for notes for lectures. Okay, so, someone's already signed up for today. Hopefully that will work. Although I should confirm, but who signed up for today? Yeah, yes, okay. Okay, good. It's always important when someone signs up that they actually be here. Kind of makes it a little bit more difficult. Although actually, technically speaking, that's not true because if things are recorded, then it's not so bad. Simple screen recorder. Okay, that looks good. Continue. 15, yes, profile none, that's good. Okay. Okay, super fast. Okay, Shift-Alt-R. Okay, so in principle now we are doing screen recording. We'll see if this works at all. If this doesn't work, then at least, okay, well, that's always promising when you see those counts. Anyway, so what I was saying is I was going to go through the answers for the assignment. So let's first bring that up. I'll post the answers to the wiki later, but let me first just give them to you orally and then you can tell me what makes sense and what doesn't. So, when a web browser loads a standard web page, what type of HTTP request does it make of the server? And if the requested URL is valid, what is the standard response code? So, what does it do? This one should have been easy. It makes a GET request, and it comes with a response code of 200. Yeah, response code 200. That one was supposed to be easy. All these were not supposed to be hard. Would you normally use jQuery with client-side or server-side JavaScript? Why? So if you looked up jQuery, we didn't talk much about jQuery, but this is the part of the thing was you to look up these things. What is jQuery? It's a library. So if I just do a Google search for jQuery. Remember, also, jQuery was something you're supposed to be going through in the Code Academy. That was one reason I put that question on there, was saying, did you actually start going through the Code Academy stuff? Because there's an entire module on this. But what jQuery is a library for, it's fundamentally for much simpler with easy, with the combination, where is it? Makes things like HTML, document traversal, manipulation, event handling, animation, AJAX much simpler. Keywords here. Document traversal and HTML document traversal and manipulation. What's it talking about there? It's talking about the DOM. The document object model. That's in the browser. jQuery makes almost no sense on the server side. It makes no sense to use it in Node directly on this. Well, you can use it in Node in the sense of you put a line in there so it gets included in the client-side JavaScript, but the server-side JavaScript doesn't use it. And so the answer I was looking for is that jQuery is a library for making it easy to access the DOM. The DOM is not on the server. The DOM is in the browser. These are supposed to be very simple questions, but what they force you to do is think about what is my mental model? Where are all these pieces that we're talking about in class? And if you're feeling very confused about some of these pieces, your mental model is broken. You need to debug it. I can try to help you with the debugging, but you have to kind of say, this is confusing. I don't know what's going on, and you need to talk to someone about it. Talk to your friends. Talk to the TAs, ask questions here, come to my office hours, it doesn't matter, but get help. Yes. Lack of I/O support. So that's a little bit funny when you're talking about why is it client side? You're saying what it doesn't have as opposed to what it does have.
Yeah.
Normally, when you talk about a library, why would you use a library in a certain place? You could talk about it because it has certain functionality. You know, jQuery can't fix my kitchen sink, so that's why I didn't. You know what I mean? I mean, when you talk about the things it can't do, there's an infinite possibility of things it can't do. So it depends on exactly how you word it. It'll be up to the TAs to make that decision. But I'm looking for what does jQuery do, and the things that jQuery does are mostly useless on the server side because there is no DOM. So let's be concrete about this. So when I say the DOM, let's go to the console. And let's type in document. And let's. So we've got HTML document here. It's got all these things here. It's an active object. But now let's go over to here. Oh, this is interesting. We'll use this window. We'll keep this minimized since it's getting all the error messages. Okay, so get Node running. Now let's say document. Document's not defined. In Node on the server, you don't have the document object. Do you have the window object? No, it's not there. If I go over here and I type, I type window. Let's click on window. What have we got? Window. I think this may be running really slow because of that screen capture in the background. I am not sure. Come on. There it goes. So you see window has all these things going on here. Window does not exist over there. Client side. These are the key objects that jQuery helps you access. They don't even exist on the server, so how can they help you with it? So again, if you go through the Code Academy module in jQuery, you'll understand all about the basics of how jQuery works. It's not very complicated. But what I'm asking you here is, do you know where it's used? And the reason why I'm asking that is because I want you to understand what is the difference between client-side and server-side JavaScript? This is really important to get clear in your head as early as possible, because if you don't know that difference, everything else will be completely confusing. So the language is the same in the server and the client, but the objects you have access to are different. And the methods you have access to, the functions and the objects that are defined are different on the server and the client because there are different things you want to do. You want to serve HTML documents and other things from the server. You doing disk I/O in the browser, you want to do things like wait for mouse events. Does it make any sense for a web server to wait for mouse events directly? No. It does not have a direct access to any sort of GUI. It's a network server. So the thing that's weird about this from what you've learned previously is a web application is split in two. There's a server-side component and there's the client-side component. And then they communicate over a network. And the server-side does certain things and the client-side does certain things. And they don't overlap. They overlap some, but they are very disjoint in their functionality. So whenever you're implementing a web application, you're thinking about given functionality, a question you always have to ask, and it's a question you don't have to ask when you're running a standard desktop application, is where do I put this functionality? Do I put it on the server, or do I put it on the client? Sometimes the decision is easy. Sometimes the decision is not. Sometimes the decision is both in some form or another. And the classic case for this is validation. You might want to put something in your interface that says, make sure a email address looks like an email address. Does it have an at sign in it? Does it not have any other non-alphanumeric characters other than at sign? Is it clean? Okay, you can check all that in the browser. And that's nice from a user interface point of view because you can then signal a little thing saying, oh, there's a problem here. But you need to also do it on the server because you can't trust the browser to do anything. Because the user can manipulate. Because remember, they can go into this stupid debugger and then change everything around. Change exactly how your code runs. Resubmit arbitrary queries. You can't trust anything the browser does, what it sends back to you. So if it actually matters, check it on the server. So you often do input validation on the client for user interface purposes and on the server for security purposes. So that should be a question in the back of your mind when you're thinking about all this stuff is server, client, where am I doing this and why? So briefly explain how the values of the two HTTP headers fields are used by standard web servers to customize their responses. You may choose any two standard HTTP headers. So, how would you go about this? Answering this.
Look up the list of standard
HTTP
headers.
Yep, look up the list of standard HTTP headers. That's one way of doing it. Another way of doing it is just going here, reload, get a whole bunch of these things, click on one of them, and then look at these response, look at these headers. So raw headers, if you want to see exactly what they're. So request headers, response headers. So all these are the request headers. Look at all these things. Pick two of them. Tell me what they're for. How are you telling what they're for? By looking it up. But you can figure out some of these things. Well, like the user agent, we already talked about the user agent. That tells the server what kind of web browser we're running so they can customize the content to it. Remember this whole thing of saying it's saying Mozilla, Gecko, Windows rendering. Except it can accept text, CSS. Okay, accept language. How about that? What language should this be in? You ever notice how websites sometimes automatically switch languages on you? You'll visit a website that is not normally in English, like somewhere in Europe or something, or Asia or something, and then all of a sudden you get the English page. It's because, or if you speak natively in another language, it's the opposite. It's because your browser sets things like this. Set encoding. What's gzip? You know what gzip is? It's a compression program. It's used for reducing. I think that microphone just died. Second here. How's that? Can you still hear me now? Should I turn it up? Is that the same volume? That seems a bit quieter. Okay, let's try this. How's that? Okay. So that's why they give me two microphones. But given that this is Monday morning, there might be a problem with that one. Anyway, So these headers, so the accept encoding is saying that what format of document can I accept? Specifically this is used, can I accept compressed forms? So instead of saying the text in an uncompressed form over the network, this allows it to be sent compressed. And these are two particular formats for the compression. So deflate's one type, yes? So these are, request headers is what the browser sends to the server saying what it is. The response headers is what is the headers that the server sends along with the document. This is metadata about the document. So this is data about data. So things like saying, how is the content encoded? Oh, it's encoded with gzip. It said, I accept encoding gzip deflate. This is saying, okay, I sent it to you in gzip. And then it's saying, like, so does it say the language? No, it doesn't actually say the language. But content says the length, how long is it? What's the character set of it? What's the date that we set this out? You know, various things about the caching. So I didn't ask you about this part, but yeah, this is part of the negotiation of the client server. This is what the browser sends. This is what their server sends back. So the purpose of this question was for you to get down and look at saying, what the heck is a request header? I could have had you write a whole essay about request and response headers, but that seems a bit much. Yes? That's true. I did not specify. I thought I was thinking request headers, but you're right. You could have said response headers. I did not say request. I just said headers. So you can say about either. So why do web applications often use a separate template language to generate web pages such as Jade rather than using the language of the application? What? Why start from scratch? Okay. Anything else? I mean, why not just code it? I mean, I could code everything in JavaScript. Why do I need this Jade thing?
Ease of use.
Ease of use. I mean, basically, when you have a template language, there's no reason why you can't use a template. You have to use a template language. It's just that if you're generating HTML, if you do it in a standard language like JavaScript, you're going to be having a lot of really boring code doing most of it. You have a template language, it does most of it for you, and then modifying it is relatively easy. You're not playing with like equivalent of print statements or string manipulation statements or whatever. I mean, any regular languages are kind of messy. And the template also lets you fill in programmatically pieces. I mean, if you just had unchanging HTML, you would just do it once and forget about it. The whole point of having a template language is so you can fill in the blanks. Change it. So I was looking for you to say something about that. And then, is JavaScript an untyped language? So what's an untyped language? You must have looked this up, right? Well, give me an example of an untyped language. No, Python is not untyped. Python is loosely typed, like JavaScript. Assembly language. If you did a Google search and looked up typing and untyped, you would have seen that assembly language is basically the canonical example of an untyped language. It's where the data basically has no type. It's just bytes. And the meaning of everything is completely up to how you want to use it. I mean, you might say, oh, here it's a pointer. Here it's an integer. It doesn't know. It doesn't care. It's just you're using bits. What I was asking for was for you to go and say untyped programming language. Typed versus untyped. Okay, come on. Language is typed. For example, this. Untyped language, most assembly language, any operative for you. This is what I was looking for you to look up. And you can see that loosely typed is not untyped. Every value in JavaScript has a specific type. The only difference is identifiers can refer to any data value. So the type referred to by a given identifier can change at runtime. In a statically typed language, every name that you give something has a fixed type associated with it. That's what I was looking for. Again, this is to get you away from saying specifically, yes, no, there are types all over the place in JavaScript. And they're specifically there to keep you out of trouble. You can ask, what is the type of some data? It's just that given an identifier, you don't a priori know what type is associated with it. You have to check, unless you have some convention for what it should be. So that was, now this, I of course cannot give you the answer to this, but I will be interested to hear from the TAs what sort of answers you gave to this. I don't want to discuss that right now because we could probably spend the rest of the class discussing that. But I am very curious about what you've said, and I'll try to get something out about that soon. Moving on, let's talk about today. So today, we have tutorial 2, and in this tutorial, what you're going to be doing is downloading this thing, Form Demo, and playing with it. And the assignment, I have to make the assignment a bit more specific, but what the assignment is extending Form Demo. So the basic things are here. The only thing that's really problematic is the last question here, which is implement a simple query interface. I need to be a little more specific exactly how that query interface is implemented so you can implement it the same way so it can be checked automatically. So that'll be up within the next day, but otherwise, this is what you need to do. Make the application listen on port 3200 by default, add a home link, add a phone field, and then do this. So what I want to do right now is I'm going to get Form Demo running and show you a bit about it. If you have your computer in front of you, you can play with it as I go, but otherwise, that's what we're doing in the tutorial. Yes? Right. I understand what you're saying. That's still to be determined. That's why I'm thinking we're going to give you a script that will let you check answers. You have some web application, but probably not till late in the week. You'll still upload it to CLearn. Okay, so what do I want to do? Oh, yes. So we've downloaded Form Demo. Let's bring up this terminal. Okay, so I have gotten this. Where did that go? In a different browser. Oh, I was being clever. So let's go back here. Okay, so I've got this Form Demo here. I unzip it. I've got Form Demo. How do I run it? So first off, you should see that there is a node modules directory. So I already gave you the dependencies. So all you have to do to run it, just type bin. Okay. Something's happening, maybe. Then we go over to our browser. And we have a simple little form. So I'm going to show you what this application does. Let's say Ottawa, Canada. I'll say it's in December. I'll tell you when. Okay. So it added me to this. Now, I have to go back here. I have to do this again. Let's see. I don't have to fill in everything. So I've added that. Okay, it's added it. To what? Well, turns out there is also this thing called list, which lists them. So this is a very simple website, it's a very simple web application. It's kind of, technically this is not Hello World, this really is more like Hello World, because this is the base functionality that any real website does. You have the user input something, you do some processing on the server, and then you return responses based upon what the user currently in the past has done. So now the question is, how does this work? So the other question is, how does this work and how do you figure it out? So there's one thing, so you'll see here now we get these nice little messages here. Now I'm going to tell you about a few little nice features to help you with things. First off, this right here just will run the server. What if you want to see some debugging information? I want to see that, it turns out you can have these debug statements in Node that will tell you about what's going on as it runs. This is using the debug module. So what you can do is set the debug variable and then set it to be star. You have to put in quotes, otherwise the shell will complete it. And then you see stuff like this. You might notice this is kind of verbose, because what's it saying? Express router, express application, form demo server. So what this is all stuff is inside of the Express framework. That's what's all this stuff over here. Normally, you're not going to want this, right? Because it's kind of, verbose. So you can control this. Instead, you can say, I just want to see some of them. So I can set this to any sort of pattern I want. The star matches anything, so I could say form star. Now I see all the messages that start with form. If I want to see the express message, I see all the express messages. So, okay, that's how you get this. This is in form demo, so this is somewhere in our code. Where is it? So, the first thing to know is what's actually the code being run first. It's the thing in bin, it's this thing here. Okay, so. Okay. Let's get that going. Let's make this a little bigger. So this is the actual program that gets run when you say bin www. You shouldn't normally need to change this, but I'm showing it to you so that you see what's happening. So this says, var app equal this, this and this. So first off, let's look at these statements. What are these var statements? They're variables, local variable declarations. What type are they? We don't know. We know that we call this require thing, and it returns something that's assigned to these. Now, if I look at usage, I look, oh, look, there's this thing called app. And then later on, what do? I call app.set. So what type is app? It's an object. I can access things like objects using this dot notation. So what is this doing here? It's saying it's loading this app thing, it's loading this debug thing, it's loading HTTP thing. What these things do, we'll talk more about later, but if you look, you can see it from context. Oh, here we create a server, here we get it listening, here we do some stuff for normalizing the port, here we do some stuff for error events, but the thing I actually want to show you that's interesting here is debug, listening on this. So what did we see in the terminal? We saw listening on port 3000. That came from this. So plus bind. Bind is type of address a string. If it's address a string or it's pipe plus address or port plus this. So this might tell you something that, oh, it could actually be listening on a pipe or it could be a port or something else or... So there's something more than TCP/IP ports that can be listening on. But again, this is very general code that's part of the framework. You don't have to care about it. The part that does matter is these debug statements. So when you're coding stuff, if you want to add in various kinds of debug messages, you can just add this debug and add this in here. Then you might say, well, how do I get that prefix in front of them? Well, that came from the top. form demo:server. form demo:server means all the debug messages in this file will come from what will have this prefix in front of it, just like this message has that prefix in front of form demo:server. That's sitting there. This is the actual message. And then here, it gives a little timer offset. This can tell you how far into a given request does it run or something. So don't worry about this for now. But this part is the more interesting part. So before we talked about var in the context of functions. But here we're using the var statement at the top level in a file. If you use a var, if I'm typing at the command, you know, at the read eval print loop, if I just type node and I start typing var there, it's kind of useless. Because the scope I'm in is in the global scope. So anything I type there is going to be there anyway. So var doesn't really limit anything. But somehow the var here is presumably not useless. So what's the scope of this var? It's the file. So when you're client side, there's really only one file. There's the document. You include other things in that document, but ultimately it's one document that you're always programming inside of. And so really there's one scope. You could say, and anything you want to limit, you have to do by, if you want to limit that scope, you have to do that by creating functions. Node has something else. There is a scope per file. So what this means is by saying var on these variables can only be accessed inside this file. If you want to access it outside of this, you have to use this require mechanism. So what we're really saying here is that there is this other file. When I say this require, there's this other file. I want to load that. So what's this require? ../app? That's the app.js. This is the file that's being required. But you see that it wants that file here, and it requires it and assigns it somehow, that file, to this variable right here. Okay, so this is going to return, this file, somehow loading this file will return some object. That object is what we have all this stuff here. So what is that object? How do we produce that? How does that get returned? Well, let's go over and look at this. So here we've got all this stuff here, var, 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 var. We have a bunch of things here, blah, 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 blah. And then we have this. Module.exports. Do you see module anywhere else in this file? No, it is not anywhere else in this file. It's not even declared in this file. Yet, it is referenced. It is used. Process of deduction, it must be built in somehow. And that actually is true in JavaScript. If it's not something, I mean, if you didn't declare it as a variable or something, and if it didn't come from there, it's not a member of an object, it's something that's built in. It's some mechanism that got loaded in. Or it's something that comes with the environment. So this module thing is special. So this module.export says it's equal to the app object. And when we go on the other side, we did that. We accessed that app object. So what I'm talking about here is the entire mechanism Node has for dividing code up into multiple files and for keeping you sane. This is the module mechanism in Node. You know, other languages like Java and stuff have all these elaborate things for interface, implementation, and special syntax for including files and stuff like that. You know, or C has header files that you include and stuff. That's not how you do things in Node. It's actually much, much simpler. What you have is a node application is divided into sets of JavaScript files. You start running one JavaScript file, and that file brings in every other file. And the way it brings in those other files is by using these require lines. When you do a require, what it does is it loads in this file that's referred here, and the rules for what exactly it's referring to there we'll talk about in a bit, but it loads a file, evaluates that file, and expects that file to basically create do something with a module object. Specifically, there'll be this thing module.exports. This module.exports, whatever its value is, it's what's going to be returned as the value of running the require. That's the linkage. So this is how I'm exporting an object from here. And then here, I'm including that object. There, let's get the highlighting right. Oh, and then it changed my font. Fine. And here's where I actually assign it. Now, you might think, wait a second. So I can return an object when I evaluate a file. I can only return one object. That's all I can do. Everything else is private. The only thing, you know, unless I make changes to globals or something like that, which in general you should not be doing, but you're returning one object. And that object is it. You might say, well, isn't that kind of limiting? Well, no. Because that object can contain references to almost anything. It can have an arbitrary number of properties. And you can just dynamically add and remove them. So that object is an arbitrary container for whatever you want to return to make it public. So in effect, everything, think of this as a, you know, classically a class or something. That's the file. Everything in this file is private. All the stuff you do with var is private, except for what you export. Now you notice I don't have an exports line here at the bottom of this file. The reason I don't is because this is the top level file. This is the one I evaluate. Everything else should do something to an exports. So, So again, here, this file is index.js. This is in the routes folder. This is the one that you're actually going to really want to change. You don't want to mess with the app.js. You don't need to mess with that. You don't need to mess with that. You just need to mess with this file. This is what defines all the routes, which means it defines how different URLs get processed. So what does it have here? It has something for slash, has something for add, and it has something for list. List is a get, slash is a get, post, add is a post. Why is add a post? It's because this is what changes the state of the server. This is where we add things to the server. Now we'll talk a bit about how this works and how this relates to the stuff we're talking about with JavaScript and objects and everything after the break. So I'll pause now.